Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
The key to winning big is using every little bit of knowledge to your advantage. At Odds Checker, we give you the edge. Better odds, better picks, and better offers to make you a better bettor. Why settle for less? Quickly compare the odds at every sportsbook to ensure that you're getting the best price to maximize your return. Visit us at www.oddschecker.com/US. Odds Checker. Sports betting smarter.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 22nd, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast in quarantine. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I need a nap, dude. I'm serious. I need to go to sleep. Can you handle the show for a while?
This is what's funny is that I actually lately I haven't been napping as much, but you know the wife has been working from home for the last month and a half, 2 months, whatever.
Yeah.
Which really proven my style because this is my palace during the day, right?
Right.
So I feel like I want to watch Die Hard again. I watch Die Hard again. You want to take a nap? I'll take a nap. And now, like, it's exposed, so the wife sees what I do and not do all day long, right? So so I'm a frequent napper. I usually take a nap or two a day, you know, not long, 15, 20 minutes, you know, catch up. But awfully judgy. But we're in a world now where everybody's judgy anyhow, right?
Right.
But I actually haven't been napping lately. Maybe just because I got stuff to do now. We're working without money. As I told someone the other day.
I think they call that volunteering.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like the worst case now. I mean, before it was like, how are you doing, Scott? Well, you know, the company shut down and no money coming in. And then now it's like, well, now there's all kinds of work to do, but the money still isn't coming in. Can I go back to what it was?
I don't know. I think I trade with you. We have a granddaughter who has to go to school every day. So... we have to take care of her every day while her dad goes to work, and they get here at like, I don't know, 6:15 in the morning. And I'm used to sleeping till like 9 or 10. Now I get up at 6:30 every morning. I can't even make it till like 11 o'clock at night. My eyes are burning. I'm exhausted every day. I get up at 6:30. I'm already ready for a nap. It's 10 o'clock in the morning when we do this show.
I will say Sunday I was in bed at 7 p.m.
I would love that.
Eat at 7 p.m.
I start to have dinner at like 3:30 now. I'm like, I should be living in Del Boca Vista with my.
Well, I don't actually have meals now. It's just like a nonstop
grazing
out here.
Yeah,
so, you know, food's just out, and I just walk by and take a scoop of this and a scoop of that. Right.
Oh, it's getting brutal. The other thing too is that they stopped making the no calorie diet tea that I drink. So now I've got one of those diet teas that still have calories. Now I'm gaining weight because I'm drinking it like it's water, and I'm putting on a little extra calorie here and there, and now it's like, what? I got on the scale. I get lost. Now I just can't lose weight. I can't do anything.
That's right. It's summer, so you'll just go outside and melt.
Yeah, my summer body is not what it used to be, I'm telling you.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we discussed that we are back to work. Live poker in various forms is coming back. By the end of this weekend, at least 25 poker rooms will be reopened, though some, but not all, with reduced capacity and procedural changes. So here's what's new, and settle in. Chris, you can go ahead and take a nap.
This is all right, this is excellent. Thank you.
Catch up. Hamul Casino in San Diego opened Wednesday with full ring games, though players can opt to play with a maximum of 5 players with a 50% rake reduction. Derby Lane in Florida opened yesterday, which was Wednesday, with 6-handed games. Seminole Hard Rock Tampa opens today or Thursday, depending on when you're listening. with six-handed games, a $3 max rake, and possibly plexiglass dividers on the tables. The two best bet rooms in Jacksonville, Florida, Sarasota Kennel Club in Sarasota, Oxford Downs in Summerfield, Florida, and Palm Beach Kennel Club in West Palm Beach, Florida, are scheduled to open tomorrow, which is Friday. Club 52 at Melbourne Greyhound Park in Melbourne, Florida, will open on Monday. By Andy Up's research, at least 17 Texas card clubs are open or will reopen by the end of the weekend, with at least one of them opening as early as May 1st, and at least one with plexiglass dividers on the table. Choctaw Casino in Oklahoma says it is targeting June 1st for reopening with reduced capacity poker, as is Talking Stick Resort near Phoenix. While tribal casinos in California are cleared to open, non-tribal card rooms are not in that state. However, Towers Casino in Grass Valley opened on Monday nonetheless, with players wearing face coverings and full ring games, but the casino was shut down by state agents the next day. Foxwoods Resort and Mohegan Sun in Connecticut will reopen on June 1st, but without poker initially. Mississippi casinos can reopen tomorrow, Friday. And all but Beau Rivage, which will reopen on June 1st, and Pearl River Resort, which hasn't announced an opening date. None will feature poker initially. Indiana casinos may reopen in phase 4 of that state's reopening plan, tentatively June 14th, but none will be permitted to offer poker initially. And finally, AnteUp has started a reopen webpage at anteupmagazine.com/reopen, listing verified details on casino poker room reopenings. If you have any updates, please email us at editor@anteupmagazine.com, because that is a lot of work. I tell you, I've been doing nothing but it for the last 3 days.
I feel like we were just thrown back in time, and that was a fireside chat, and like everyone's huddled around their little MP3 players and listening on their iPhones to see exactly if their state has opened up or if their poker room opened up or not. But wow, it's quite impressive how quickly all of a sudden they all just said, "Hey, this is the weekend." You know, not all of them, but a lot of them said, "Wow, this is the weekend. Let's try."
A lot more than we thought, right?
Yeah, a lot more than we thought.
I will say we keep talking about the last 6 weeks or so, we kept talking about the timing where we think we went back to like March and we were talking about weird stuff that we think is weird now, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it just kind of shut down. It's like I wasn't expecting it to, obviously it's not just reopening now, but I am a little surprised at the rate of reopenings, and more so the surprise is the number of poker rooms are back. I mean, I think initially the last couple of weeks we've been told by most folks that most casinos will not be opening their poker rooms initially, and at least in the casino market, that is the case. But certainly not the case here in Florida, and definitely not the case in Texas. So, but that's also not terribly surprising, I think. I mean, one of the things that we've always told folks is that casino and gaming and stuff like that is different in Florida and California than it is anywhere else. And now Texas with these new poker rooms, we can add that into those group of states. So, you know, here in Florida, we have casinos, you know, some Seminole casinos, one Miccosukee, and some of the paramutuals that run poker rooms also are allowed to have slots. But for the most part, it's poker, right?
Yeah.
So that's how they make their money here. So it's not surprising that that's the only game you have, you find a way to reopen, right?
Yeah.
California, obviously, in a different situation now because they just aren't opening businesses as quickly as Florida. But and then Texas, obviously, you know, there's no gaming commission. So really, everybody's just kind of on their own based on what their local authorities are saying. So let's imagine that's why they're opening up so quickly there and why it was kind of hard for us to figure out which ones were.
Yeah.
You don't get that same guidance like, you know, when we hear from the Mississippi Gaming Commission and they tell us, hey, casinos can reopen. So now you know to go check them all and find out who's reopening. But there was never a light switch in Texas to let us know. And that's why I was surprised yesterday. The one was open on May 1st. I can't even imagine that. That was 20 days ago.
Yeah.
They've been dealing and no one told us. No one told us. None of you out there listeners told us.
What's going to be interesting now will be the numbers.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I'm not just talking about like earnings and stuff like that. I'm talking about the COVID numbers. Like, will it be alarming and will it rise significantly again and then forced to be shut down again? Because then if they shut it down again, then it's going to be like the death knell. Or maybe just it's going to be a long time. They're going to wait till like a vaccine comes out. Because, you know, if nothing happens, if the numbers sort of just stay where they are and even kind of come down, or then I think everyone will open and then it'll just be like, hey, deal with it. But if they just shoot up, for instance, in Texas, where things are already going up anyway, I think, but then at that point, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what they decide to do. And it will suck if the numbers just skyrocket again and then they shut it all down again, because I think it'll be a long time before they try again.
Well, yeah, and I'll say I've been telling a lot of friends this. I don't see another shutdown coming. I see there's a potential for obviously if this thing does a spike and take back off, there's obviously going to be politicians that say, hey, we need to shut it down. But I will tell you, at least here in Florida, or at least in our area of Florida, where COVID really hasn't been anywhere near the event that it has been other places, I think the next time they try to do a shutdown, it's not going to be those guys with rifles at the state capitol. I think it's going to be normal people there, right or wrong. I think that's what's going to happen. Obviously I'm hoping that this is all going to work out. I'm hoping that, you know, people go back to work, people go back to playing poker, and the numbers don't increase. I'm not an expert, so I don't know. But if they do, there's going to be a lot of other issues more though than the death knell poker. I think it's just going to it's going to be an even crazier place to live.
Yeah.
At that point, as angry as people are now, right? So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. So a couple things I was interested in were how people were bringing back, and we've got an item here we'll talk about next about what poker's going to look like. But, you know, it looks like six-handed is kind of the standard in some places. Some of these poker rooms haven't said anything. I'm like, I think only like one or two of those Texas rooms that I saw had any guidance on their website or Facebook page as to what they were doing. And I think only one of them was, I think, maxed at seven players. So I imagine those are all full ring games. You know, I was intrigued to go to Derby Lane yesterday just to see. But, you know, that seems kind of ridiculous, right? Yeah. Obviously, I was busy trying to figure out all these Texas rooms I didn't even know existed. but according to the Tampa Bay Times, they had four tables within the first hour. And then by the end of the day, they were at 10 or 11 tables. And I think they were only going to open – I thought they were only going to open or use 13 tables.
I read that somewhere.
The Times article actually said half, which would have been 26. But they didn't hit either of those numbers. But still, yeah. 11 to 12 games by the afternoon. I haven't talked to anybody that played and actually asked our friends at Hamul to give me a report on how their first day went. And they were probably just – busy and tired. They didn't let us know, but I was just curious. But you know, we did see some tweets and comments on Twitter. But it sounded like what I've read from those things, very limited. People that were there enjoyed it, didn't mind it as much. The criticism was from people that weren't there and don't think people should be there. So that's an entirely different issue. But it does seem like the people that came out to play are fine with the masks and the whatever else you have to do, the temperature checking and all that kind of stuff. So whether they're fine with it or they just are putting up with it, that I don't know. But they're there, right? So
yeah.
The other thing was the one casino that opened. I guess we don't distribute to them, so whatever. But it is just kind of interesting to watch the pictures on some of these pages. I mean, some of these folks have been open for a while, and it is kind of weird to watch a bunch of poker players with a bunch of masks on or bandanas or whatever they pull out of the sock drawer, right? I did watch a video of the a room that has the plexiglass dividers, and it didn't look as bad as I thought. It's certainly awkward, but it is going to be interesting to see how this continues and how long some of the stuff is in place, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, if the COVID numbers keep going down and people get more used to this and we move into different phases of reopening and stuff, Which of these things are going to continue and which of these things are going to eventually disappear? That's going to be interesting too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's people have equated it to 9/11, you know, and how suddenly everything changed after that day and how going to the airport has never been the same. And now it's, what, 19 years later? And we still take our shoes off. We still, I mean, there are some relaxed things like pre-check and things like that. But for the most part, those things stayed in place. The locked cabin, you know, for the cockpit or whatever, and that kind of stuff stayed in place. So, you know, maybe some of this will stay in place, even if there is some sort of. Because, you know, when we used to have Frank write for us, and we talked about, you know, getting sick at the table with the flu or any of those types of things. I mean, we've all admitted it, that it's really an easy way for someone to get sick. So, you know, catching the flu isn't fun. You know, catching H1N1 back in the day, you know, was a pandemic or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, maybe these things, some of these things may stay in place. Maybe the button will continue to be hand sanitizer forever, or maybe there will be these plastic, you know, plexiglass, whatever you want to call them, dividers and stuff, you know. I mean, hell, I like going to the buffet and having my food saved by a sneeze guard. I don't mind. I mean, who knows? I don't know. But, yeah, I think everything has changed, at least until, you know, I mean, if there is some sort of vaccine that's just 100% effective, you know, then, you know, like polio or something, then, all right, things will probably go away. But you never know. People may say, hey, I like feeling safer or cleaner or healthier at a room, and who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good segue into this next item. So I'm just going to go ahead and read that, and then we'll pick back up this conversation, because I think it's interesting, because I talked to the director of poker for this room throughout the last week about what they were doing. So and we had the same conversation you just mentioned. So I'll just read the item, and then we'll keep talking about it. All it right. says, so I say, as poker rooms begin to reopen, we're starting to see how poker might look, at least in the short term. While most of the open rooms haven't changed the game or procedures much past going behind shorthanded or requiring mask, others are going farther. House Club Poker Room in Texas has installed plexiglass dividers on their tables, and the Seminole Hard Rock Tampa's reopening press release indicated that it might too have dividers when players arrive today. Palm Beach Kennel Club has provided the most information of any of the poker rooms open or reopening that we've seen so far, with some interesting changes. So I'm just going to read their press release with everything. Games will be played with a designated number of players to be determined by management. The waiting area will not be utilized. Players will be seated upon arrival, and games will commence when the designated number of players is achieved. Players will not be granted table transfers. The table you're seated at will be your table for the duration of the day. Players will be required to purchase their initial buy-ins at the cage. Dealers will not rotate from table to table. Dealers will be assigned to one table only. Chips will be isolated to a specific table. Once chips have been introduced to a game, they can only exit in the following manners: drop boxes, dealer tip boxes, cashed out at the cashier. Once chips are removed from play, they will not be recirculated until they are sanitized. Paper cards will be utilized and discarded at regular intervals. Eating food at the tables will be prohibited. Drinks will be served with the tabletop cup holders. Cup holders will be sanitized prior to being issued to a new customer. Hand sanitizer will be used in lieu of a dealer button. When a player has the sanitizer, they are encouraged to use it. Dealers will sanitize their hands after arriving at the table. All players will be required to sanitize their hands upon initially or subsequently arriving at the table.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty decent. I have a couple of questions about it, too. One of the things I wonder is, well, they said there's no waiting area, so will there be someone like standing at the door saying, you know, hang on, all our tables are full, there's a waiting list, everyone stand 6 feet apart outside? Or,
yeah, that's a good question. I think some of these rooms, you need to call in ahead, and maybe that's not from home, maybe that's from the parking garage or parking lot.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I'm here, and then they escort you in when you get there, or they have a room. So, but yeah, I don't know what to do about walk-ups. I mean, one of the interesting things in the Derby article that I read today, you know, a guy played a little poker, then went out and watched the dogs, and then presumably went back in and played some more poker. So I don't know really how that works, but I think the idea is, you know, just trying not to have massing in any way that's unnecessary, but. Yeah. that is probably going to be the biggest change, I think, for folks, is not being able just to hang out there reading your ante up, waiting for them to call your name. You're going to have to be somewhere. I don't know where it is. It's probably easier to do at these paramutuals because they have large outdoor areas where you can be somewhat safer and somewhat more distanced while you're waiting. But, yeah, I got to think your cell phone's got to work. And I'll tell you, I've gone to a lot of casinos where my cell phone doesn't work.
So, yeah.
I don't know what to do in that case, right? So, but, you know, those are exceptions to the rule rather than the rules. So,
and then the paper cards thing is interesting. So they're going back to, like, the, you know, the cards that everybody has at their kitchen table?
I haven't had a chance to talk to him about that. That's obviously what it seems like. Oh, it's paper card. And discarded. So, you know, normally those plastic cards that we all like that tend to last a long time. I mean, not forever in a casino, but they certainly aren't discarded at regular intervals like they are here. So,
'cause it seems like Though plastic cards could be sterilized like the chips. You know how they're doing with the chips because they're plastic. Because I know people put them in there. A lot of people put their cards like in a dishwasher and things like that when they want to clean them because they're plastic. But the paper ones, they absorb sweat and hang on to crap. That's why they get fat and thick and nasty and they throw them out. But that's interesting. I wonder why that's more sterile than just cleaning the plastic cards. Maybe it's harder to clean the plastic cards. I don't know.
Again, some of the stuff isn't specific, so I don't know what regular intervals mean. Does that mean at the end of the day, throw all the cards out and tomorrow you start the brand new deck? You know, again, like we said on the last couple of weeks, I mean, some of the stuff is window dressing, right? So, you know, if you are at the end of the day or at the very last time they use those paper cards, that's the grossest part of it, right?
Right.
If you are playing when a brand new deck is introduced, that's the safest part. So, you know, it's doing the best it can. I mean, I don't think it's realistic to throw away a deck every hand, right? So, right. It's just trying to figure out the best case, but yeah, that would take some getting used to, because you know those cards are going to get bent a little easier, right?
Yeah. Now you got to look out for angle shooters and card cheats because they're easier to screw with. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, as soon as I got this press release yesterday, I messaged the manager and I'm like, I love the hand sanitizer as a dealer button.
Yeah.
I just think it's a really fun, fun change. I don't know if it's fun, I guess, but there's something fun about it. Right. But also serves a purpose, right? I mean, when you're a dealer, you wash your hands. But two, I think it's because it's also visible the entire time you're there, just to keep reminding folks to sanitize as much as they need. I would imagine sanitizing your hands is not going to be it's probably going to be the easiest thing to get people to do.
Right.
You know, we've seen the people already resisting the mask and the social distancing and all that, but I haven't yet heard anybody get whiny about sanitizing their hands. So that I would argue probably is the best thing you need to do anyhow. So, as we remember poker before all this, when people didn't even wash their hands coming out of the john. So,
yeah. So
I think to your point about what stuff's going to last. And that's what I was talking to this manager about. I'm like, I think the temperature checks might survive through all this. You know, I don't personally have a problem with that. I mean, I know it's probably, it slows your entry in, so if you're late for a tournament, you got to wait in line while the guy zaps your forehead with the thermal, right?
Well, but, I mean, you know, we're looking at no tournaments for a very long time, so when tournaments come back, I think you won't have that.
They're on already, so it just depends where you are, but large-scale tournaments, yeah, you're probably right, but...
Yeah, well, it won't happen here. You're at one table, you're there all day, it says.
Well,
so you can't leave your table
if
it's a tournament.
Yeah. Right. But other rooms, I mean, then this is one room's
procedure. Yeah, it's one room.
Right?
So you think other rooms are doing tournaments?
Well, the Texas rooms definitely are.
They're definitely doing tournaments. Wow.
Yeah, because I saw pictures of players. Hey, here's one our tournament tonight. So There are tournaments happening some places. So I haven't heard of them outside of Texas. But again, Texas is 17 of the 25 rooms that either are open or we know are going to open right now. So that's our test case right now for the most part. So
jeez.
But yeah, so I think, you know, temperature checks, you know, I mean, if I have a fever or I'm running hot, I mean, I shouldn't be out, right? So if you tell me I can't come in, yeah, I might get upset, but I can't really be upset with you, right?
Yeah.
And then I would feel, I feel better at the poker room that the guy next to me doesn't have a high temperature, high fever, right?
Yeah.
Or whether he has the vid or something else. So, so that might last. I mean, I think more hand sanitizer around and available is always a good thing. I mean, I was always really insisted on that and on the cruise poker room that we had our own Purell dispenser because, you know, I just think that's really important. So, but I don't think you're going to need to ask for that anymore. I think that's going to be everywhere. So some of that stuff will stick around. I mean, you know, paper cards aren't going to stick around, I don't think. Staying at one table isn't going to stick around, but it's stuff that you need to do or probably could help now, so
to get going too. Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, I'll be interested to see what the players say about you know, being locked into a table. I mean, one of the things I hope this does, this, a lot of this stuff that we, whether it's this room or other rooms, are probably going to do initially, I hope it kind of breaks some of the superstitions that were annoying in the beginning, right? So the constant table changes, the wash the cards. I mean, I don't mean like sterilized cards. I mean, the dealer wash, the deck changes, all that kind of BS stuff that for the most part is BS. They're not going to be entertaining those requests anymore. So hopefully after a month or two or 3 months of doing that, those people realize that or forget that they could even do that, right?
And
they'll do it. So, yeah. So I don't know. The other thing I think is interesting in you know, all these casinos that I've been looking at, some are not allowing food, drink, or smoking on the floor. So that makes sense to me because, you know, those are the same rooms that are casinos that are requiring masks. But there are ones that are requiring masks that either are having drinks on the floor but not food, or the other way around. Or are still allowing smoking. All those things require you to de-mask.
Yeah.
So, they put the staff members into some kind of police authority now where they have to walk around and say, hey, sir, can you put your mask back on? And the guy points to four drops of scotch left in his glass and say, I'm still drinking. Comes back 20 minutes later and the four drops are still there, right? I mean, that's kind of stuff. You know how people are. They're going to work on the system. So, so that's one another interesting thing in these Palm Beach rules. I mean, no food, no eating, but you can still drink. So, I mean, I think if you gave a poker player a choice of drinking or eating at the table, they're obviously going to choose drinking. So that's fine. But, you know, I guess you could squeeze a straw kind of around the mask. So, what's that going to be? Is it going to be you still have to have your mask on while drinking and have to use the straw?
Or yeah, I don't know how. I mean, I'm assuming that if you want to take a sip, you pull your mask out from under your chin a little bit, take a sip, put it back down again.
Well, yeah, but then the CDC guidelines are advice is, you know, don't touch your mask.
Don't touch your mask, yeah.
So now you're reducing the entire reason you have the mask if you keep fidgeting with it to, you know. So, again, it's all, I don't want to say window dressing, but there's some inconsistencies and stuff out there. So here, speaking of inconsistencies, here's a mind blower that I struggled with yesterday. I had my first COVID post on my personal page through this whole thing. Again, I cannot make up my mind on what I think about any of this. But the one thing I'm confident on is the guidance is confusing and contradictory. And I'm not going to get in a whole diatribe about that. But in the midst of all that, you know, we talked on the show the last couple weeks about, you know, right, how do you do this with 6 foot?
Right.
How do you play poker with 6 feet, right?
Because
there's no way to do that except for heads up when you deal your own card. There's no way you're going to be 6 feet away from another human being at the poker room. So, but the other guidance is, you know, no groups bigger than 10, right?
Right.
And while they kind of encourage that to be people you share the household with, it doesn't say that specifically, right? And if we can go out to eat here in Florida, you know, you and Jeannie and Laura and I can, and We can each invite a couple couples to join us. We can go to the table, right?
Yeah.
So now that's 10, and guess what a poker table is? 9 players and a dealer. That's 10.
Yeah.
So if your each table is 6 feet away, does that fall under – does that work? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to talk that stuff out, though. So, I think we've said if it's person to person, then you shouldn't have poker at all. You shouldn't have table games at all. I mean, there's just no way to do it, right? But they're doing it. So, more and more, I want to be a fly on the wall in these casino discussions on what they come up with, because every casino is different, and the stuff does seem inconsistent. But
yeah, rulings, and that's the thing too, is you'll be on that fly on the wall, and I'll be the fly on the wall in the CDC, and then we'll compare notes. It's just ridiculous. You're right that the things that they say, it's like, okay, this, and I'm all for the shutdown. I'm all for the quarantine to help us get a grasp on this. But people don't understand that now that it's starting to relax a little bit, what they're saying to you is, hey, guess what? We now have room for you in the ICU. That's basically what they're telling you, that it's okay because now we can handle all the beds, all the people that's going to get this thing again. So now you can relax a little bit. You know, they're not saying, hey, we want the economy to start back up again. That's not what they're saying. They're saying, we have enough room to take care of all the people who are going to get sick now. So if you want to try to loosen up, go ahead, but it's only because we have room for you, not because it's okay to do it. You know, it's scary. It really is scary. I obviously want everything to get back to a level of where we're comfortable and can play and put out a magazine and whatever. But I don't know. It's pretty scary. I'm hoping that the numbers just sort of plateau and don't go crazy and they shut everything down again. But not to be a Debbie Downer. It's scary.
No, I hope you're saying whatever. I mean, no one wants to see this continue any longer than it has to. So I think the hope for at least the other thing I'm confident in is, one, we can't stop things from reopening, right? So the next best thing, whether we want to or not, the next best thing is the hope that a month from now, there's no sizable change in anything, right? And if that happens, then we can feel pretty safe about those people that aren't going out can probably feel more safer going out, and some of the stuff can be reduced a little bit further until there is an issue. So I think that's the thing we have to hope for, right? The people going out and enjoying themselves right now, and the numbers don't change, or they keep getting better. So
we have the antiupmagazine.com/reopen page, so you can check for updates pretty much daily. Scott and I are adding any news that comes our way to it, and hopefully we'll be back out there with a magazine pretty soon. Any updates? Papes, the Antiup Fans Online Play Money Tournament Series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/papes, PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines, with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. Also, join the Antiup Fans Group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or a call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans Group on Facebook.
And that is super important because we are fresh out of everything now. So,
yeah, you know, you could be the difference between us continuing the streak.
Making Chris miserable, keep sending stuff.
Yeah, the show could be ending if you don't send us anything. So this could be it. We'll see you in a couple of months. Hey, we get to Kevin O'Malley's move, though. So here comes part one. We'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. We've had a very good night as we sit with 800. The game is nine-handed and is a typical 1-2 game. The blinds post, the under the gun makes the table standard raise to $10. It's folded around to us in the cutoff with the ace of hearts, queen of hearts. This is a good hand, and based on what we know about this player, I'd say this is a good spot to raise. He's a loose, aggressive player who can play a wide range of hands, but doesn't often go insane. He bought in for 200 and sits with around 400. We decide to triple his bet to 30. He's the only caller after thinking for a short time. There's roughly $60 in the pot, and the flop is the ace of spades, queen of diamonds, five of spades. After some thought, our opponent leads out for $40. I don't think there's any way we're behind here. We make it $100 to go. Our opponent once again thinks for a while before calling. There's around $260 in the pot, and the turn is the 10 of clubs. This time, our opponent slows down and checks. I've got to tell you, I'm confused at this point in the hand. I think playing pot control might be the right play here, but maybe that's a mistake. We check behind. There's still $260 in the pot, and the river is the 7 of spades. Our opponent counts out his stack, $270 left, counts out $125, and puts it in the middle. So, what's the move?
We have to constantly evaluate new information, but once we settle on a plan, we usually need to stick with it, absent some new information that changes it. I don't think we have enough information here to change our plan. We checked on the turn for pot control, and we've controlled the pot. Succeeded. We have top two against an opponent who has confused us with his actions. So I think we need to call here despite the flush getting there.
Well, I'll pretty much always call with top two unless there are four to a straight or a flush, etc. The donk bet makes me think he had something inferior to our holding and may have improved a second best. So I don't think I can see myself folding. I'm going to call. Here comes part two.
Hello again. What is going on here? There are very few hands that make sense other than perhaps the king jack of spades or the king ten of spades. We might have let him off the hook by not betting the turn if he has the king ten of spades, but isn't he calling any bet we make at that point with either of these hands? Is this a flush? I guess you could say curiosity got the better of me, because even though I think we're behind, we make the call while saying, two pair. Me too, he says, and tables the ace of diamonds, five of diamonds. We table our top two pair and rake in the pot. It feels like we played this wrong. Did we play this wrong? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes the right move isn't the clearest one. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, O'Malley asked us whether we played this wrong. Well, I'm going to say I'm not sure I agree with the pot control argument. Obviously, in my comments, I said that was our plan. We needed to stick with it, but I don't think that would have been my plan. On the turn, we're only worried about pocket aces or pocket queens, who are more than happy to let us take charge. We probably took too big of a risk checking there, knowing what our opponent has now. But knowing what our opponent has now, it's possible that we didn't get max value from this hand.
Yeah, a little passive for my taste, I think, but I am glad we didn't fold. And the aces up makes sense, I guess when you replay it. But I don't like to be that passive when I have something like that, especially with a scary board and Broadway turn possibility getting there and spades out there and things like that. So, he tried to represent the flush, but I had to call a two pair. It's just the way it goes.
One of the things that I debated when I first wrote my response here, I said we definitely didn't get max value, and I changed it to possible. What I'm curious about is, I mean, if we had bet on the turn, like I think we both would have, right?
Right.
I'm assuming we would have got called there. But that's an assumption, right? And we don't know. It does seem like he tried to represent the flush, like you mentioned, on the river, and made a pretty substantial bet, $125. So that's really the number I'm trying to figure out. Could we have gotten more than $125 out of this? So, if we would have bet, $100 on the turn again, $150 on the turn, and he called, then yeah, we would have got more out of him. But if he folded, then we wouldn't have got that $125. So I don't know, but.
Well, here's an interesting thing. Our bet on the turn could have scared us on the river, because let's say we bet, I don't know, the 50 or 60 more or something, and he just calls, and then the river comes and he bets out. Now you're thinking, well, was he just calling because he was drawing to the flush, and now he's bet up because he's hit the flush and thinks we had a really strong hand because we bet it the whole way, and he thinks we're going to have to call. So, I mean, there are consequences to that bet, too, I guess. Sure. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's definitely why I changed it to possible we didn't get max value, because there's possibility that all kinds of possibilities could happen had we bet there. So.
Yeah. I mean, if we bet like 40 on the or 50 on the turn or 60, and he just calls, and then the spade drops, now he bets out 125 or 150. Now you're like, oh, he was drawn to that flush because he called us on the turn, and now you may end up folding instead of just calling the 125. I don't know. But good call, though. It's a good call.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And Phil Lynn, who's keeping us in business.
Keeping the show alive, Phil.
Has the last Hand of the Week in our hopper right now.
This is it.
All right, so Phil said after a cooler, we bought in for our third $200 buy-in with $200 left in our wallet.
Wow.
Where he says the fine wine and cheap beer casino in the Midwest at a $1 to $5 bring-in PLO game, which was mostly straddled to $10. We ran that buy-in up to $1,400 and have most of the players covered when this following hand occurs. One player limps, and we call the $10 straddle. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm going to tell you what we just did. Let's start over. One player limps, and we are in middle position with 8-6-4 Trey double suited.
I see. The thing about pot limit Omaha and any other kind of Omaha really is four cards can look good to you. Especially when they're double suited and all roughly in the same neighborhood of each other. But this is a horrible hand. And you're in middle position, so you got people in position, in PLO behind you. So you're looking for a magical flop, really. And I mean, it's not that I wouldn't play this hand in certain games and stuff, but this is a pretty big game. And I know you've run it up to 1400, but you're also run your third $200 buy-in, so that could explain some things, too. I don't know. This is a hand that I would throw into the heap pretty fast. If I'm going to play it, it's going to be a call. I'm not going to risk any more money than I need to see a flop with it. But I don't see myself playing this hand, like, hardly ever.
Yeah, this is almost as bad as it gets. I think where people get excited about this in Omaha is that the numbers are crunched together, so you've got some straight possibilities obviously there, but they're not fantastic straight possibilities, remember that. And they're double suited, but again, they're not fantastic flush possibilities either, unless, you know, you're talking a straight flush. At that point, that's exciting. So yeah, this is a hand that really looks good, but is absolutely horrible. You know, if I'm last to act and it's just a $10 straddle, okay, maybe I'll take a flyer and hope for the best. But in middle position, when we have a lot of people to act after us, I'm not willing to risk my $10 now to hopefully flop something big, knowing that something big is probably going to get me in trouble too. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, as I mentioned, our hero does call the straddle, and he does admit this is not a winning play. Maybe I'm on winner's tilt. Five players see the flop. King, 7-5, rainbow. Small blind checks. The big blind, who is a tight aggressive player, bets 30, and the loose aggressive straddle calls, and now it's on us with one player to act after us.
Well, we have a ton of outs. I mean, this is one of those big old wraps, I think, isn't it, or whatever? So
yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of cards that'll help us win. I'm not even gonna add them up, but it's over a dozen. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about being really aggressive here. I mean, somebody bet how much, you said 30?
30, yes.
30. So
a tight aggressive player.
Okay. And then there was a caller. So I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I like to bet on the come, but in this case, maybe we put the hammer down on the turn. I mean, I don't mind the call here. It's a pretty decent-sized pot that's building. It's rainbow, so even the next card isn't going to give anybody a flush. I mean, it could give somebody a bow to the board pairs, but other than that, you know, I know we have a lot of outs and we can bet it on the come and maybe shut down this hand now and you'll win, you know, pittance, but I don't know. I think I would probably just call here. I think some people will raise, and I'm not saying raise is wrong either. I just get this sort of, I like to wait one more street in this game before I really come alive. So I'm going to call.
Well, I mentioned pre-flop that this is a hand that could get us in trouble, and here's what I meant. You know, so yeah, we have a incredibly generous straight wrap right here. But you're right. And how do you play it now? I mean, generally speaking, in Omaha, you make your money on the come. And, you know, once something gets there, people tend to shut down a little bit more. So that would be the case to raise here. And we do have a ton of outs here, so it should get there. But what happens if it doesn't? And the other thing too is, you know, this big blind, tight, aggressive. Did he have pocket kings and flop the top set? And when we raise, he's going to re-raise because there's nothing really here for him to worry about, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's less likely in Omaha that somebody raises with pocket kings than in Hold'em. I mean, you should, but that doesn't mean you always do. So that would be my fear in raising here, is that if we're up against that set of kings, he's going to repot at that point because he's got us on the hook. And then what do we do? I mean, now you got to do some real math on, I mean, it looks like Phil says 17 cards wrap. Whether that's worth the pot at that point. So I don't know. I think we played with fire playing with his hands. Now we got an interesting flop. Let's not keep flicking the bick. let's call here and then reassess. So that's probably what I would do.
Hey, we agree on an Omaha hand. That's weird. That never happens.
I would say I'm 50-50 on that, though. So.
Oh, yeah, I am too, though. I am too.
Not going to be opposed to anybody raising there if they insist on it. Okay, our hero says we pot it to 140 with our 17-card, mostly nut wrap, minus one blocker. And it folds to the loose, aggressive middle position player who quickly calls again.
Wow.
So the guy that bet out actually folded. That's interesting.
Wow. Hmm.
All right, the turn is the deuce of spades, so our board is king, seven, five, deuce with two spades. Let's see, and our opponent checks to us.
Well, I have a sneaky suspicion this person is drawing too. I don't see this person having a set and just calling. And calling as fast as he did, and I don't think if he had a set earlier, he would have just called when that person bet out. I think he would have raised, and I don't think he would have called as quickly with a set. I think drawing, so he's probably got something similar to us.
Could be a very, very similar hand.
Yeah, and now that spades have become present on the board, and a flush could get there on the river, you went pot already, so you're going to want to keep. You're showing everybody aggressiveness, so they may think you don't have the wrap, but you've picked up outs here too, right? I think an ace gives you the wheel. So, I mean, you have almost half the deck. You can feel pretty confident betting pretty big here, and that this person probably is doing the same thing you're doing, so they may let it go. So, I mean, I don't know if I want to bet pot, but I might put a $200 bet in here.
Yeah, I think it could be a substantial bet. Because remember what, I mean, we were on the flop, we were worried about the big blind having the set of kings, right?
Right.
But he got out of the way. We're the one that were super aggressive there. I mean, we potted it after a raise, right?
Yeah.
So I think our opponents have to put us, not specifically on pocket kings, but they're definitely thinking we have a top set here, and you're right. I think it certainly seems like the other guy is drawing probably a lot of the same cards we are. So, so really, our best chance of winning and not splitting this pot is to keep the pressure on him and make him feel like he's got a catch to win. And maybe if we bet enough to scare him off of that, you know, the problem is if he has the same hand we have, he's got the same number of outs, so yeah. I don't think you could put a bet in that would legitimately or rightly scare him out. So But that's the play to make, I think, right now. And again, if we miss all those outs too, then that probably means he misses all the outs too. And by us keeping the pressure on now and firing three bullets, gives us a much better chance of winning that pot on the river with nothing.
Yeah.
So. All right. So our hero says we don't have a spade, but we did pick up additional outs for a wheel. We've got a whopping 20 card straight draw. We pick up the four ace outs, and our tray is no longer our blocker. We look at our opponent's stack, and it looks like we have him covered. He might have about $700 left. This is the only loose aggressive player of the five that I originally tagged as professionals. He's a 25 to 30 year old male who is clean cut, healthy, and has a head of hair for which I would trade all my chips. Since labeled him a wannabe like me, or perhaps he's just been tilting since I've been here. I think the correct move is to ask for a stack count from the dealer and then bet an amount that will leave him at least a half of a pot size stack left, which should be about $200. But we don't do that. We smugly think that if he had a sit, we should have heard from him by now, so we pot it. The dealer stays 350, and we push out the chips, thinking the hand is over now. The loose aggressive player thinks for a few seconds and calls. Phil says, is he sandbagging us with kings? I don't think so, but... says the river bricks out with an offsuit jack Boggs hero. Offsuit jack for a final board of king 7-5 deuce jack, and our opponent checks to us one more time.
I have to bet. Obviously, we don't bet. We have what, 8 high or something. Yeah. So, yep. I mean, you put all this money in there. You're not going to check it down for 8 high. You have to bet here.
Well, again, it goes back to what we're talking about too, right? I mean, I think it's clear that he doesn't have a set here. And he was probably drawing, and this card did not hit any of the draws. Didn't hit the flush, didn't hit a straight. So if he has the same kind of hand we do, we got to bet, and he can't call at this point, the way we bet, the way we played it.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine a set of kings sitting there calling this whole time without being scared or without trying to shove us off or whatever. This guy has to be drawing. There's no way he doesn't come alive by now.
We show an interest, so when somebody shows interest, you bet it up. It's like an auction, right?
Yeah.
If you got somebody that's bidding against you, and you've got more money than they do, you just keep bidding because you know they're going to keep bidding too, right?
Yeah, we have to bet here. I don't know how much to bet. I don't know. What was in the pot, did he say?
Well, it's well more than what our opponent
has. So the pot was, you said 350. So we bet 350. So there's 700
in the pot. We bet 700 plus everything that's in before, and our opponent only has 350 left right now. So
yeah, I mean, so there's 1,000 in the pot. So I have to bet whatever the guy has left. I mean,
Bet pot. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, you know? I would just say pot. I mean, there's no way we're winning this hand, and we got too much out there. I'd rather give up 350 with a chance to win 1,000 than just fold and save 350 when I know I can't win it. You know, you got to try to win this hand now.
And this is for folks that haven't played PLO or thinking about playing PLO. This is why this game can be so dangerous. I mean, you think, oh, it's 1-2. I play 1-2 no limit all the time. But, you know, that 1-2-5 force bring in and then a $10 straddle. Now these pots are pretty big. You have all these outs, it's what we said from the beginning. We had a crappy hand, and we went all the way to the end and missed everything, right?
Yeah.
And now our only chance to winning, and the right play to make is to, you know, bet another 350 or whatever this guy has left and hope that he folds. So you can see how the swings are crazy in PLO.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a brutal game.
Okay, our hero says we have nothing. Actually, we have the nut low. he says, however, if I were him and I had pocket kings with this ragged board, I think I might play and act the exact same way. All right, disagreement there, but
well, he doesn't have the nut low, right? The wheel would be the nut low.
No, he doesn't have the wheel. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, but, well, yeah. Anyhow, it's PLO high, so no one has a low. he says pocket kings are still the nuts. We give up and check. Our opponent doesn't want to show. Oh, no, I think we could have won this hand with any kind of bet, or even if I asked for a count of a stack and see if we can get some sort of read on him without having to put a lot of chips in the pot. I'm sure I've been victimized by this move once or twice. We finally realize he's not going to release his hand, and he's not going to show, so we save everybody a little time and show our trade 4-6-8, and the dealer convinces him that we have nothing. He shows his 4-4-6-8 exact same hand, and just a pair of fours wins a $1,000 pot. You gotta love PLO.
Ace Trey was in the low. I'm sorry, not the wheel, because there is no wheel. I was just thinking about it. I'll look at my notes. Okay, so anyway, wow, that's crazy. A pair of fours won a $1,000 pot. That's insane.
It seriously just pipped us.
Oh my, it's almost exact same hand.
Difference in two hands. So,
yeah, I was thinking the guy might have had like 4-6 or 6-8, but I didn't think he'd have 4-6-8. And that's crazy. And then a pair of fours wins it. That's insane. That's why you got to bet there.
If we had thought about it a little longer, we might have also decided that checking so many times from a loose aggressive player can't be a good hand. These were huge mistakes made by me in this hand on the turn of river, but we still got almost 1,000 in our stack. But again, you have to remember the story that you're telling.
I was just going
to
say that.
That your opponents are telling, right?
Yeah.
We told a story of a serious made hand throughout this entire and besides pre-flop. But from the flop on, we were showing that we really, really liked our hand. Now, we obviously liked it because we had so many outs, but they don't know that, right?
Yeah, they don't know that.
And the way our opponent was playing, again, I'm not so sure why Phil thought he might be sandbagging. There was absolutely no reason in PLO to sandbag with top set. You know, you need to play that fast and hard.
Yeah.
Especially when the spade draw got there. I mean, really, even a $25 bet probably would have won this in hindsight. I mean, obviously, you're not going to make that, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. Well, Phil, thanks for keeping the show afloat. If you don't send us anything in the next 4 or 5 days, I don't know. It could be over, so. But don't forget to pay attention to antiupmagazine.com/reopen, and we'll try to keep you updated as soon as possible with anything we hear about your poker room or poker rooms near you. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.